Thank you very much. I'm going to upload my PowerPoint here. I have some slides to show. My topic may seem slightly off from the panel topic, talking about global reactions to what China is doing. I'm digging into history, making a comparison between the genocide in Xinjiang and the Nazi genocide, particularly how that played out in Nazi-occupied Europe, where they were also forced assimilating people. And I want to make the argument that it is basically the same story, and we should realize this. Let's see, my pictures are apparently coming up. Can you see them?
They're loading right now. Yes, now it's fine.
Can you see it? Thank you. But I would also like to take a little bit of time to talk about their reactions. Actually, this will show up in my presentation as well. So should I go for 20 minutes or 15?
Let's try 15. If you will need a bit, few more minutes more, it's fine. But we have still third speaker waiting. So if you can make 15, it would be great. Thank you.
I will try to. I will probably skip some things. So my main objective is to understand this genocide. In this slide, I've listed a few points about what is happening, what we know is happening. As you can see, it's a very sorry list. Our previous speaker, Kate, mentioned some of these goings on and the parallels with Tibet, where they seem to be also taking up the harsh measures and camps and so on that are being used in Xinjiang as part of what I argue is a genocide. And there is both domestic, although muzzled, criticism inside of China, and there's also international criticism. There is now also a few teams that are preparing genocide legal cases based on how these actions violate the existing genocide convention, and also how beyond that, the cultural erasure that the Chinese government is doing is violating commitments to protect cultural heritage as human rights. There is a strident Chinese propaganda counteroffensive, which involves intimidating Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other native peoples of Xinjiang who are abroad. It involves mobilizing allies at the UN. It involves trying to invite journalists, gullible journalists and diplomats, to see fake camps, which has partly been working. But I think that the tide has very much, in world opinion, turned against China on this. We have, above all, many, many personal testimonies from survivors, witnesses who have been there and seen what is happening. In terms of comparing what is happening to the Nazis, I realize this is a fraught issue. There's been a lot of debate over whether one can do this, and I certainly agree that one should not throw around the Nazi comparison in too light a manner. On the other hand, I take heart from those who argue that we should compare what is happening to the Holocaust, because if we do so in a thoughtful way, we may be issuing a call to action, alerting people that this is happening again, and we should not let it. So I want to compare these two men. I've been struck with how similar they are in their role. Chen Chengguo, whom Kate mentioned, is the Communist Party chief who was transferred from Tibet to Xinjiang, who is now overseeing these operations. And Reinhard Heydrich is one of the top Nazi leaders, one of the coordinators of the Final Solution on the Jewish question in Nazi parlance. He was also governor of Annex Czechia and had a role in planning and implementing the Germanization of occupied Europe. And this is where I see a key similarity, not just with the smaller minority of Jewish people, but with the larger populations of people that the Nazis would have to deal with. He was assassinated in 1942, so his projects were cut short. Nevertheless, I argue there are strong similarities. Let's see. Am I not allowed to switch slides anymore?
We are stuck in that slide with the post why we should compare for some reason. No, it's working.
I could move it myself. I could move the pictures myself, Olga.
I will try.
It's working now.
Now it's perfect. You move it, or maybe Professor Romova move it, so.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I can move it for you if you want.
I would prefer to try myself.
Okay.
So one point is that these men are not the leaders. They are the people carrying out the orders from above. And that, I think, goes for both Chen Chengguo and Reinhard Heydrich. Heydrich was very much, when he was assassinated, in the midst of preparing and starting to implement these Germanizing plans in Czechia. And again, it was not his personally developed concept, but something that he received as a project to carry out. The Wannsee Conference is a famous event that was led by Heydrich, and I think it's often misunderstood as if it devised the master plan. As I see it, they were expanding existing measures, and Heydrich was at best a creative coordinator and someone who expanded on those measures, but he was not the one who inaugurated them. Here he is listening to an outline of the general plan for occupied Europe, and this is where he gets his ideas. So the Nazi plan, of course, was to purify Germany and then expand the Lebensraum and then go on to dominate the world. And his own goals that were very similar to Chengguo's in Xinjiang, but cut short, was first the classification of targeted populations, mainly distinguishing those that could be Germanized or re-Germanized, as they would say, having come under bad influence, they had turned into something else. Now they would have to be re-Germanized because they were of good enough of racial stock. And then the non-Germanizables, which would have to be dealt with. And the way he set about this was to decapitate the Czech intelligentsia, curbing the resistance, but also to make it impossible for this nation to exist or this people to exist. And then he was also starting on accelerating, forcing Germanization. The non-Germanizables he would exterminate, maybe expel, maybe exterminate. And the entire territory would be taken over with population replaced, architecture and culture rebuilt and so on. All of these I find very close to what's happening in Xinjiang. It's also interesting to compare how these actions were justified as scientifically based. In Heydrich's case, he even sought aid from an anthropologist who's complicit in this. There's a lot of material on how he imagined this classification to proceed, and it's still partly opaque, but very interesting to look at. The cultural genocidal measures that were taken are also very interesting to compare. So although these aspects are not included in the UN Genocide Convention, they were certainly conceived as such by the convention's father, Raphael Lemkin. And after the war, in that debate, when Lemkin was pushing for the convention to be adopted, the Czechoslovak representative spoke to this and how Heydrich and the Nazi regime had designed the destruction of Czech and Slovak culture to destroy everything that might remind them that they had such a past. And this is very much resonating with what's happening in Xinjiang. Here we have Mr. Chen Chuanguo in Lhasa, actually. His perhaps most interesting point of fact in his resume is that he was for a while back in his own province of Henan in the late 1990s when Falun Gong had been made illegal. And he was picking up on methods for arresting them and force reconverting them to normal people, so that to take the Falun Gong faith out of them through torture and pressure and through these measures that they're now using in the camps with the Uyghur detainees. It's something that he's reapplying. I have a few words on the plan that the Chinese Communist Party has, which uses different vocabulary, but I still think that it's quite similar to this Nazi idea. It's a rejuvenation of the great Chinese nation, which is sort of reasserting its rightful place in the world. And at home, it's about what Kate Sanders already mentioned, ethnic unity and an amalgamation of the peoples that live there, which I think are code words for forced assimilation. When we look back at the history after 1949, the communists adopted a Soviet system, basically. Then they have drifted away from communist ideas, the critique of empire. We've had the ultra-nationalists that Kate also mentioned that gained the confidence of the party, and they are the ones that have now formulated the ideology behind the forced assimilation policies that we see carried out by the Chinese Heydrich, Mr. Chen Jiang. The new ethnic policy since circa 2017, when this become intensified, is to purify the nation, perhaps abolish the ethnics, to not recognize them as existing anymore, only have Chinese people in China and no minorities, and in particular in Xinjiang, to consolidate that area and take it over. The main means that they are using are very similar to what we just heard about. The differences are in the high-tech means that they have. And also, I should mention the formulation of the program is not in racist terms as the Nazis, but more in the nationalist terms. Although I do think that racism is also behind it, but can't be overt because there's still a commitment to this existing ethnic ethnopolitics framework. And the system that Chen Jianguo has set up turns on trust. And this is very interesting. You can be trustworthy, that's usually the Han Chinese, or maybe a few Uyghurs. You can be average, that's possibly untrustworthy. And if you are someone that openly is proud or defiant, then you can be sent to these camps. And there's, as you know, long lists for all kinds of infringements, owning a Quran, having been abroad, making a phone call abroad, having a relative abroad, those kinds of things make you untrustworthy. And this is actually applied very broadly. Many people have been revealed in Chinese documents that have been arrested for unspecified, not even detailed, specified untrustworthiness, or even by quota. And Chen himself said, seize all that should be seized, which implies that there's this already existing idea among the Han settlers that the Uyghurs are untrustworthy, we better get rid of them. And I think it's in that spirit that Chen's boss, Xi Jinping, said to show no mercy. Chen Chengguo, just as in Tibet, he's recruited natives to help, including Han Chinese people who live there, who go, as you've heard about, on home visits, which is really a kind of inspection, which can make, you see the blank stare on the faces of the Uyghur hosts. They might be sent to a camp after this, their children confiscated, and so on. And I do think that this trustworthiness is a code word for the classification that I'm talking about. These are the people to be undone. These are the people to be eradicated as a distinct people. So Darren Byler just captured this in an interview he made recently, where trustworthiness means aligning yourself with the Chinese state to be Chinese. And it's all targeting the native peoples. What was once communist class struggle under Mao has been replaced by racism. And that is, you know, what this genocide is about, to undo these people. There's a couple of more notes that things I have been thinking about regarding this trustworthiness. It echoes the social credit system that now is more and more conditioning the everyday lives of ordinary Chinese. So it's an example of how practices from China, just as with the torture of the Falun Gong and so on, is taken to Xinjiang and then elaborated there or intensified there. But it's part of the practices. And this, I think, is also what's happened globally, that the Chinese leaders and Communist Party are exporting means of oppression and so on to the abroad, and expecting that to work. It's a certain amount of hubris involved. And it's very fascinating, number two, that this goes back to imperial Chinese concepts of how the people should be obedient. They should be the liangmin, the good people, as opposed to bandits or barbarians who don't want to be conquered. They all deserve punishment as criminals, which is something I have written about separately. But currently this concept, trustworthiness as a reincarnation of this idea of good people that till the land and stay where they are and don't rebel, it's also something that's very creatively re-weaponized as a tool of genocide with Chinese characteristics in Xinjiang. If you are ethnic, you are untrustworthy. How are these categories implemented in practice is a big question. We hear about how people get arrested and sent to camps, detained and sent to camps. There's one single image among all the satellite pictures that show detainees in two different colors, red and blue, on the ground, as seen from the sky from a satellite. And it's unclear what this really means. Is there a color coding that goes with a certain fate? Could it mean that some of them have a predetermined end station of being sent to prison or even killed? This is something we don't know. This, it's a point that has not been leaked yet that we don't know about. Then beyond this issue of classification that I think is so closely aligned between what happened in Nazi-occupied Czechia in Europe and in Chinese-occupied Xinjiang or East Turkestan, a couple of aspects to mention is the way they, in their propaganda, build these fake camps and then invite gullible foreigners. I wrote a piece about this. Another is that before the foreign criticism, international criticism even got started, because people were not, in early 2018, late 2017, people were not yet aware around the world that this new effort was happening. They actually published images of these camps on the internet, local in China, not thinking that foreigners would see them. And this is fascinating. The Nazis did the same. And it was to show the majority population, the Germans, the Han Chinese, that we're dealing with these terrorists and bandits the way they should be dealt. We're dealing with them harshly. And now, of course, this had become material for accusing the Chinese government of the crimes that they are committing. Another very interesting parallel is the appropriation of children or confiscation of children that are cut off from their native culture and then reared in their master race language. I think that the scale of this is actually bigger in China, and it's also based on this same notion that was at work in Czechia under Heydrich, that among the people is a certain amount of people that can be transformed. And especially if you get them early, so if you can take them away from their culture, away from the influence of their parents and whatnot, you have a better chance of appropriating them as a good people, trustworthy people. Another example, a couple of images from the cultural genocide that's playing out in China. The two pictures on the left are private citizens' experiences showing up on Chinese social media, having your books confiscated because they're in Uyghur or because there's a Quran. And on the bottom, being forced to tear up your interior design because it's not Chinese enough. And you must now be Chinese, so you have to destroy your own home. On the right-hand side, the assault on the elite, so to speak, of Uyghur and Kazakh culture. The singer on the top, Ablajan, is disappeared into the camps and rumored to have been sentenced to a lengthy prison term for making videos like this. Uyghur, modern Uyghur music, showing children that are proud to be Uyghur and modern at the same time, which is not allowed under this new regime. The Uyghur is something to get rid of, and to be modern means to be Chinese. And the panda is how a Uyghur cemetery was remade and redecorated. It's a cemetery that used to have a grave, the tomb of one of the most famous modern poets, in the Uyghur language. Even more stunning is this, you know, as yet unfinished list of the decapitated Uyghur and Kazakh cultural world. All these people who are fluent in Chinese, highly educated, cultural leaders, artists, academics, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them who are now gone. And the disappearance of which, of course, is an assault on the confidence and pride of regular people. This is something I also imagine must have been the case in Heydrich's Czechia when he annihilated the intelligentsia there. So to conclude, I see the Chinese Communist Party and the Nazis as having closely aligned goals. Purifying or unifying, the vocabulary is slightly different, their nation. And the vocabulary derives either from race theory or nationalism. But the goal is to expand state power, to colonize this area of Xinjiang, and to build dominance beyond this area. And the means, again, that are so similar are the classification that is mounted to target the undesirable ethnic group, and then proceed to work on them, to force them to convert or die, whether it's the Germanization or in the past or the Sinicization that we see today, the ultimate goal being to eradicate these people. And I think I'm ending here. I think my main message is that the world has not yet, in terms of international reactions, the world has not yet fully realized that this is happening in this manner. And not just the facts of the actions that the Chinese government is taking, but also the intent, the goal of actually undoing the existence of these peoples as such, which is the formulation of the Genocide Convention. That is something that people and countries around the world have not yet fully embraced. We see Macron and Merkel and others talking about insisting on a UN inspection, which of course is stalled because Michelle Bachelet at the UN Human Rights Council doesn't want to send people to these fake camps. She knows very well that that is what they want to arrange. So there's a stalemate. And I think we have enough facts, but the interpretation is lagging in terms of world reactions. Thank you very much.